Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Further from sobriety. So sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Sobriety.
And now it's time for Homegrown.
There it is.
Your only show dedicated to local art with your host, Leslie M. Scott Jones and David Von Strawn.
Oh, wow.
He gave you all love.
I know. He gave me all love today.
That's cool.
I like that, though.
Not her.
That's cool.
Hello, Charlottesville. It is Sunday. It is October 21st, and if you're listening to my lovely voice, that means it is Homegrown, your show about local art here in the Charlottesville and Central Virginia area, 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I am David Von Strawn, a.k.a. the Devious One, a.k.a. Nefarious Rucker, a.k.a. Negro Suave, a.k.a. Black Frodo.
My favorite. That's my favorite.
Just trying to get through the darkness. Hashtag Trump's America.
Trying to get through the darkness. Hashtag Trump's America.
There's an awful lot of singing today.
Yeah.
Is it?
I think it's the time.
I was going to say, it soaked
into my brain, so everything musical theater.
Everything.
With me, as always, all is the lovely, loquacious, lascivious Leslie M. Scott Jones.
What's up?
I miss you. I miss you. I haven't seen a lot of you. Were you playing Anna right now?
Mimi. I'm playing Mimi.
Oh, my bad. That's the new phrase.
Yes, I'm going to be called Mimi.
That's the new phrase. All right. And the big date is when?
The projected date for the arrival is November 8th.
So November 21st.
No.
Because it's usually like 3 weeks after or something. Like, well, isn't the gestation period like 10 months now, and it's getting longer?
It's actually supposed to be 10 months, but whatever. Yeah, it's supposed to be November 8th. I think he's going to pop out around the 11th. That's what I'm projecting.
Right on. That's the Mimi meteorology right there.
Exactly.
I'm feeling you wrong, doctor. I'm feeling more of an 11.
Right. Well,
my dad's birthday is November 11th.
So that would be cool, right? Yeah, she called me Friday, and apparently there's a lot more pressure downward. Oh. And I was like, okay, so he's turned. He's just getting in position. He's getting ready.
Okay.
You know,
that's what that means.
Went to the doctor with her on Monday. She's already a centimeter dilated, which is normal. This close, you know. And of course, I was like, yeah, about time for the alien to come on out then.
Yeah.
That's, you know, you've hit that point where you're, you know, it's not like, wow, I'm pregnant. This is so cool. You've now hit the point where it's like, get the alien out of my body.
Wow.
And I was like, and that is perfectly normal. It's okay. You know, about two months later, you know, you'll be like, okay, why do I have so much crap to carry around? Like, can I put you back in? Like, it was so much more convenient when you were just here. Like, I didn't have to, like, carry crap. Mm-hmm. But,
yeah,
oh my God, I ignored you. Stop. I'm very popular this morning, apparently. Yes. Anyway, so just getting ready to be Mimi. Getting ready to go to London for 2 weeks.
What?
Yes. So you'll have to be without me for 2 weeks on the show. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
I'm
I know you will miss me. I know you love me.
When are you going to see the show?
I already saw it.
When'd you see it?
I saw it Wednesday.
How come you didn't hang out?
Because I was on a date. I was on a date.
I believe it says banter. Okay.
Right.
Are we past banter time?
We're past banter time. Okay. I was on a date. I'll tell you about it later.
The miracle of life and Leslie's dates.
Yes. Yes.
Possibly leading to more miracles of life. Who knows?
Hey, that factory was taken out a long time ago. A playground has been installed. Nah. Nope.
With that, we go to Susie McKenna.
They told me this was going to be a nice, calm, quiet moment.
Oh, they lied to you, Susie. They lied to you. I'm sorry.
You know what? There is nothing that I can say that will entertain people as much as you two. First couple of minutes.
Ain't she precious?
You know what's funny? I don't know if it's like the Halloween show that we have on right now, but we have a pretty dark play with which the director we're going to talk about is our second guest, and you are the author of a thriller called Last Tracks. I'm sorry, Last Tracks. Mm-hmm. You know, I put the emphasis in the wrong syllable. reading at the Jefferson Madison Regional Library, North Side Branch, October 26th. Susie McKenna, thank you so much.
North Side!
Thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Oh, my God.
Thank you for having me.
So talk about it. Last Tracks, like, hold that book up. Let's see. Let's see the artwork. Let's see.
Snowshoeing. Starts in Jasper, Alberta on a snowshoeing trip, and then the action actually moves to Virginia.
Oh.
There's action in Washington, D.C., Alexandria, Madison, and Culpeper.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
In those areas?
Yes.
Specifically. Like with landmarks and...
Yes.
Okay. Why did you choose to do that specifically with the topography of the Virginia landscape?
Look at him
and
using
all of
big words.
Oh, wow.
Topography.
I got some big words. But yeah, I mean, usually in the thriller, people are, you know, Stephen King, most of his stuff takes place in Maine. It's usually snowy, but he doesn't really like...
he kind of like makes up spots.
Yeah, it's not...
That
it's,
don't really exist.
I mean, the visually descriptive, but it's not so much the place. So talk about why you chose the place of Virginia and those places specifically.
Well, I guess because I've lived there and I'm very familiar with them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it starts out in a snowy area in a wilderness in Jasper, Alberta, because we don't have enough snow here to go snowshoeing a lot. And the heroine, the protagonist, is from Virginia. She lives up in Northern Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And as the story evolved, it made sense to bring the action back here. And, you know, in the thriller, you have to keep people's attention. You have to keep scary things happening. And the change of scenery also helped in that.
Yeah.
And people seem to like to go on a little travelogue. We have a really good mystery thriller group at the Northside Library. And one of the things we do there is we try to pick books with different geographic locations. So we'll read an author from Russia, from Iceland, from different parts of the world, and that makes it interesting. So I found out that people, they like to travel when they read. Okay.
That's true.
So help me distinguish between thriller and mystery. Is a thriller separate from a mystery? Is a thriller a subgenre of mystery?
Well,
is mystery a subgenre? How does that...
Well, I guess they're both genres of, you know, novels or fiction. And mysteries, they say... the crime has been committed, and then the reader's thrill is in solving it, as in a whodunit. Whereas in a thriller, the crime may be yet to happen, and you might be, and it's supposed to be nonstop action,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to just telling a story.
Hmm.
Right on.
So things keep happening. And some of the crazy things that I came up with to keep the action going, I thought were a little contrived, but they ended up being the things that readers liked. There's a cave scene because a woman has to go through a lot of survival when she's left in the wilderness with a malfunctioning snowshoe. Mm. And, you know, that whole thing, when she finds the cave, I thought, well, maybe people aren't going to buy this. But everybody says, I love the cave.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do?
Yeah. There you go.
It's like Tomb Raider.
Yeah, yeah.
But, that's what I think about, like, the new, like, right. Rise of the Tomb Raider game. I don't know. I'm a big
but the interesting, interesting challenge in trying to write a mystery or thriller is you find out why so many mystery thriller writers are attorneys or they have a law enforcement background.
Yes.
Might have been, you know, I hate to say the word cops because I was told to say police officer, but people say cops now. And that made me, I had to talk to a lot of conversations with a policeman.
Don't worry, we're African American.
Okay. We say cops.
We've said worse than cops.
There are African American police officers / cops also. You're right.
This is true.
But anyway, if you want to get things right and their procedures right, you have to talk to somebody if you don't have that kind of a background. So that actually became pretty interesting.
So is this one where the the murder has already happened, or it happens as the story unfolds?
Yeah. Murders, I tell people this is Dead Bodies with Humor. So,
oh, cool.
Because I call this a feel-good thriller.
Wait, what?
If there is such a... Well, a lot of thrillers today, they're just really so dark that it's not really that much fun to read them. And our lives, even though they might be grim at times, in these times, the Trump times, there still has to be humor. Mm-hmm. Or I think, if we're going to get through
Levity.
The day. Okay.
Yes. Yes. Big believers of the laughter.
Yeah.
Over
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got to be.
Got to have that. So what made you decide to write a thriller?
Well, I read a lot, and some of them you read, you think, oh, God, this isn't very good. I think I could do better myself.
Yeah.
And so I then joined a little writer's group, which is a great thing to do because it keeps you motivated and you get inspiration and input from other people. And first I was just writing short stories, and then somebody came to the group and spoke, a published author, and said, it's really hard to write a book. It's much easier to write short stories. I thought, I'll show you. And then I found out it was really hard. In my first drafts, I'd ask somebody to read them, and I just got trashed. Mm. So I would just keep working on it, and it just gave me tremendous respect for all of these writers out there. Even if I didn't like their books, I now had a lot of respect for them because I saw how difficult, especially...
It really is hard.
It is.
It's
especially
hard.
Especially to keep the action going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. To keep it interesting through, you know, 100,000 words and, 20 chapters. That's
right.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
It is definitely a thing.
The other thing I find out that readers seem to like is they really need to connect somehow with the characters.
Oh, yeah.
They need to like
Absolutely.
Them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or hate them.
To be likable.
Yeah, like or hate. Yeah.
For the reader.
Right.
Nobody wants to read about somebody that they dislike.
That's right.
Like, right. They have to be able to say, oh, I see myself in that person, or I see my best friend in that person. Like,
Yeah. Something. Yeah. But the book has some elements that people might not run into in their day-to-day lives. And when I do book signings, I take my snowshoes with me and plop them on the table. And because a lot of people have never seen a snowshoe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
talk about that.
I mean,
talk about the snowshoe.
Well, people, if you... picture one, what do you think of?
I think of a snowshoe.
The old lattice things with laces through them and everything?
Yeah.
No, that's not what they look like anymore. They haven't looked like that for a long time. There'll be pieces of rubber on a frame, so they're pretty much indestructible, which makes it, they're part of the story because they do get destroyed in the book.
She uses them like bulletproof shields.
Curling. It starts in Canada, and it turns out that, you know, one of the heroes in this is a curler.
Oh.
Because don't we know all Canadians either play hockey or curl?
Curling, right. Yes.
Yeah, okay. That's what you do. Yeah, right.
It's so cold. There's so much ice. There's really nothing else to do.
Then there's survival stuff, and then there's shooting and learning to shoot. I took a hunter education class.
Oh, cool.
In order to learn a little bit more about survival and shooting, things like that.
See, I just went to see my grandfather for that.
Like, just go hunting and shooting. At some point, I miss that.
You know, he would just be like, "You're coming hunting with me." Well, I am. Yeah, come on. Okay.
What did you hunt?
Yeah, that happened once.
Deer and rabbit.
Oh, okay.
He wanted me to go squirrel hunting with him, but I was like, they're real small and they run really fast. And sound like fun for me.
Oh, that's funny. Because
imagine a lead time when you're shooting the squirrel.
Oh, yeah, but when I took the hunter education class, there were a couple of young people in there, a young woman and a young man, and they'd been hunting for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just coming to get their certificate. And they were talking about how good squirrel is to eat.
It is
and
good.
They talked about skinning it and, you know, marinating it with lemon and stuff.
One like for the squirrel eating.
But I'm just saying, when you go squirrel hunting, you gotta pick the one that you want wisely, because they're not a large animal.
Right.
So, yes, it is very good meat. It ain't a lot of it. Like, squirrels are really bony.
For real, you got to get, like, 30 squirrel to, like, have yourself a decent meal.
A decent one,
you know?
Right.
Because I'm sure it renders down the squirrel meat.
Exactly.
Yeah, it kind of shrinks up a little.
Yeah,
I don't know. I've never had it.
Yeah.
I would imagine, because they're so lean. I was running.
We're going to do a drop. Clinton doesn't want to talk about killing squirrels anymore.
Leslie knows how to shoot. Never bring some.
There you go. I'll just do it for you, babe. That's what I'll do.
My producer is telling me we have to do a drop. We're going to talk more about last tracks and eating squirrel. This is Homegrown. Drop! 17 minutes hour.
Pig's brains.
Oh, pig's brains is what we're talking about during break.
Eating them, not eating them.
You know what you do. This is a show about art. This is Homegrown.
You can put them in your eggs.
Your show about art. 94.7. WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm David. Glenn's on the board. Leslie's talking about eating pig brains. Susan McKenna's in the house. Last Tracks is her book. It's a thriller. Not about pig's brains, but it's about many other things. More than anything, the frozen wilderness with a snowshoe, a malfunctioning snowshoe.
So you did I read this correctly? Were you inspired by a snowshoe trip yourself?
Yes. My husband and I were out snowshoeing in Jasper, Alberta, and it's pretty remote out there as opposed to if you go hiking on the Blue Ridge, because I've snowshoed up here too. But if you go out there, you'll go for hours and not see anybody. And
With peril?
Well, it could have been. But we get out on the trail and there's nobody out there, no cars, nothing. And after a while, he says, "You know, this would be a good way to kill somebody." I said, "Oh, what a great idea!"
The perfect
you
couple.
You could just leave them out there.
You know?
Yeah, well, we.
Anything.
Wait, are you from an Alfred Hitchcock movie? Or something?
Well, we have to watch ourselves because we're always.
You know, you could just turn around and just get hit in the back of the head by who knows who.
That's right.
Just be left out here and your wallet missing. But I digress. That inspired Last Tracks to be written. We are a show about art. We're also a show about artists. Talk about the process, beginning to end, page turn to the reading. Like, how long did it take you? Because you said it was harder than you thought.
Yeah,
in the beginning.
Well, the writing itself probably took at least 3 years. That's not my background. You know, I was in the computer software business, so this was just a harebrained idea I had that it would be fun to do this.
And how long were you doing that for?
That was all my whole work life since I got out of school.
And you just started writing like 3 years ago?
No, it took 3 years to write the book,
But you've been writing like just on and off?
Well, you write for, you know, the business world, marketing type pieces, things like that, but not fiction.
Right.
Which is a whole different ballgame.
Got you.
Yeah.
So when did you start writing fiction?
Oh, about 10 years ago, I started trying to write fiction.
No, I think you were doing it.
Yeah.
Tried
a little bit of poetry, and I've got starts on a few other books. I've finished another one, but that's going to go through the painful editing process, too. But it's a real challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think all writing is. What does writing do for you?
Oh.
And why did you choose to do it? And why do you keep doing it for so long? What does it do for you?
It satisfies my curiosity. And I guess that's why people read mysteries and thrillers. They like to figure things out and they want to be fooled. So I like the challenge of trying to keep them guessing and keep them entertained.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really important.
It is, yeah.
Do you like your own? Do you like your own writing? Do you ever like sit back and be like, "Yo, that chapter right there, that was murder." Like, I really did a good job on that. Or are you always like critical?
I'm
of
always
the work
critical,
that you
and
do?
Every time you look at it again, you find something else you could change. You think that might improve it. Mm-hmm. So the only
but that's part of the process too.
That's
you know?
Right. Yeah, and I never
finding new things.
Yeah,
finding different things.
Yeah. There's a reviewer called Kirkus Reviews, and they're very stingy with their praise. And they looked at it early on. I asked them to look at it, and they gave it a good review. So if it hadn't been for that, I probably would have just stuck it in a drawer and forgotten about it. But I found out then that people enjoy it. They get a kick out of it.
Yeah.
So.
And I'm actually also, like, intrigued by how, like, initially you were kind of hit with this, like, like, I'll show you type feeling. And, like, this, you know, I need to prove myself in this sort of aspect of writing. Talk about that. Talk about how that fueled you, how that switch from short story to novel.
Well, it makes you think differently. You have to think of the big picture, and you have to fill in all the holes.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess some writers do detailed outlines when they start, and some just let it flow. So I sort of did a combination of that, but I realized you did have to make some kind of a plan, and then you could always tweak it and go in different directions as you went along. But
cool.
So may I ask you to maybe dispel one of my stereotypes? Because I think that it seems like you're in the prime position to do so, which is like, because David mentioned Stephen King earlier, and you can you hear Stephen King talk, you see interviews, you say, oh, it makes sense that he's writing what he's writing, because he's a sort of creepy, morbid son of a gun. I mean,
well, I know, but
he seems like a nice guy.
But in spite of that, I find him entertaining. I mean,
he's very entertaining. He seems nice, but he's like.
And he's kind of self-aware that he has that like creepy facade about himself and like other people.
So if you were to say, okay, we've got someone coming on our show, she's just written a thriller. Like, I wouldn't have pictured this. You seem like a very nice person.
Appearances can be deceiving. Some of us don't look sick, but we are.
Look at Clinton judging a book by its cover.
Look at that zipper necklace.
See, I'd be the perfect killer. I could get away with it.
Right?
There you go.
Maybe I'll use the little old lady in my next one.
I was going to say, I could see her like at an interrogation table. It's like,
What do you mean?
How can I leave a body in the basement? Look at little old me. I couldn't get that body down there.
I couldn't even lift it.
Y'all are so sweet. I baked cookies for the entire precinct.
You know, I was coming, and my mother always taught me never to go somewhere empty-handed.
You're so sweet. Nobody would ever convict you. No jury would ever convict you.
Thank you. I'll see what I can get away with.
Yeah, right. Start killing people. You're on Homegrown. You're on Homegrown.
We have a list. No, we don't.
The reading. October 26th, there's a reading at the Jefferson Madison Regional Library Northside Branch.
Yes, and people should come because it'll be fun. I'll bring samples of tools that are mentioned in the book. For instance, a way to start a fire without matches. And I actually ran this by
Evan. She's actually going to do it in the library.
Well, and I checked with Evan. Evan Stankovitz at the library. I said, is it okay if I do this? And I showed him, and I said, I'll bring a pan of water so that I don't burn the library down when I start the fire.
There you go.
And then I'll bring other things mentioned when she has to survive. I'll bring samples of those things for people to see, because a lot of people that come to the library on the 26th might not have read the book.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to read a whole lot and give things away.
So did you do a lot of like real life preparation and experience and activity to try to be able to write accurately about it in the book? It sounds like it.
Yeah, I like to do a lot of hiking, and I've snowshoed for a long time, but I did take a survival class, and then I learned a lot. The hunter education class covers survival as well and teaches you a lot of things about what you can do if you get into a bad situation, what kind of supplies to take with you if you're going to go out for a trek.
So you make this sound like this was just a lark. It's like, oh, I thought I'd write a thriller. No, this is dedication.
It was. Well, you know, I wanted it.
You got all the accoutrements.
Once you get going, you want it to be accurate. So, yeah.
So it was. It sounds like part research as well. Like
right,
you researched
correct.
The environment,
right.
All the stuff that you needed to like
right.
use and survive.
Right.
Sounds like a really fun like whole like journey that you've been through in order to get to like where
yes,
you are
it
right
was.
Now. And you're not done yet. I'm sure you'll probably do this reading at other libraries everywhere. Hint, hint, wink, wink. Especially in Canada.
Especially in Canada.
Especially in Canada, because that's where it all starts in the book.
And could I put a plug in for the bookstores?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, because if we don't shop at our local bookstores, they won't survive. So you can buy my book online, but you can also buy it at the Barnes & Noble right here at Barracks Road, and also at the UVA bookstores. And if you need
the Barnes & Noble is still open.
It is. No,
for
because
people who think that's been like shut down.
Wait, it hasn't. And I've done like 14 or 15 book signings this year, and I'm scratching my head about why they say they're closing, because every store I've been in, they've had lines of people coming in. People are buying books. Young people are buying vinyl records, believe it or not. That's a hot seller. But people are shopping in stores. But if we don't keep it up, we're all going to be only shopping online. And bookstores are still fun. So.
And I'm sure you're like hooking up with like New Dominion and Playing Against Sam and like all those other like local places.
Playing Against Sam is used.
Oh.
Yeah.
You can still do that.
Oh, okay.
If somebody takes back your book, then you can read it there.
Okay.
I will buy your book and refund it.
Seriously, David?
Specifically so you can do it.
Be careful what you promise, David. You
loopholes. Loopholes.
Oh, my God.
You got to get ahead in this book business. You got to hustle, girl. You got to hustle. All right. We got to wrap it up. Susan McKenna, it's been a ball. Thank you so much. Please don't kill any people. We were just joking. we just want to put that out so Jeff Leonard doesn't hit me up at the Whole Foods.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you so much. All right. I guess it's time for those artistic events that we always talk about. I think there's a few in the Charlottesville area. One or two artistic events going down this
week.
One or two. We play music? All right, I see the music bouncing. All right, here's just some of the artistic events happening this week. Currently running through January 27th, Reflections, Native Art Across Generations, an exhibition of the work of several contemporary Native American artists at UVA's Braylon Arts Museum. Currently running through December 8th, the American Shakespeare Center. Runs a summer fall season with just four plays. Whoop Day's adaptation of Jane Austen's Emma. George Etheridge's The Man of Mood. Or Surfer Bling Flutter.
Oh, Surfer Bling Flutter.
Surfer Bling Flutter. And Richard III. And As You Like It.
Shakespeare.
Currently running now through October 27th, UVA Drama Department's production of The Wolves at the Ruth Kaplan Theater.
Yes. And you have that look because it is now playing in three different theaters.
Yes.
In this area.
Yes.
All within like 3 weeks of each other.
All right. So, A, this playwright is getting pizzed.
Right.
Second of all.
What's up with Samuel French?
There's a lot more plays, Evil.
And third of all, we talked about that last week with last week's guest, Amanda McRaven, director of The Wolves at UVA.
We did.
I missed that. I wasn't there. I had to work. F capitalism. currently running October 28th, Lion in Winter at Four County Players. Also running now through November the 3rd, Ragtime at Live Arts. Just got extended. Tickets are still available, I believe.
No, they're not.
Nope.
It's completely sold out.
They're not.
It was sold out 48 hours after the extension.
It is what it is.
Hey. Apparently everybody wants to see you dance, David.
My feet hurt. Currently running these art exhibit by local artists in the Charlottesville and Central Virginia area. Check them out. They are dope. You probably already seen them, but you just didn't realize it. All right. Jane Scaff presents her drawings about the effects of climate change at the New Dominion Bookshop. Michael Doyle presents Michael Doyle, drawings from jail at New City Arts Welcome Gallery. June Calmer and Aiden? I think it's just Aiden.
It's Aiden.
Aiden Mills.
Thank you, Aiden.
Aiden Mills presents Embodying a New Narrative, a visual discussion. Stop breathing all hard. I hate it when you breathe all hard behind me. Works by Aaron Farrington, Will Kerner, and Rochelle Summer at the McGuffey Arts Center. Joint exhibit by the FUCC, the Feminist Union of Seville Creatives, and the best acronym on the face of the earth at CitySpace. Last chance, the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center presents Old School, a play celebrating teachers and other educators. My man Lou is in this. I highly recommend y'all
Lou's
check
this out.
Lou's in
it. Mark's in it. Like, Josh St. Hill is in it, who wrote the show last year.
Yeah.
The King Story. He's in it. Yeah.
It's
Brenda Brown Grooms is in it.
I was going to say, support your... This is local art to the core. Please support it. Today, here are readings of local authors. Authors? Dudley Moore's. Authors. At the one-year celebration of the Jefferson Madison Regional Library. Local Voices Collection at 2 p.m. at the Central Branch of the Jefferson Madison Regional Library. Today, Zaltundi World Dance Fest at Ix Art Park at 3 p.m. Get your booty shake on.
I already did that on Friday.
Booyah. October 23rd, manager of the Office of Human Rights, Charlene Green, woohoo, joins local artist Destiny Wright, woohoo, for another Signs of Change workshop. Oh, these are two dope women doing dope things, developing artistic ways of representing forgotten stories of local African American history at Sojourner's Church. Check it out. October 24th, Kiawa Beadwork Artist Kiwa. Beadwork artist and 2018 Mellon Indigenous Arts visiting fellow Terry Greaves gives an artist talk. UVA's Campbell Hall. October 25th through 27th, Tandem Friend School presents My Fair Lady.
I knew how to pronounce it before you said something.
I was feeling good until you made me feel not so good.
I was there and...
Oh, snap. October 25th, Raven Mack hosts the Southern Gothic Futurist Haiku Slam. Haiku Poetry Slam. Prepare 20-plus haikus to compete at the Twisted Branch Tea Bazaar. Cool. That sounds interesting. October 25th, the UVA MFA Reading Series continues with their students, Andy Eaton and Olivia Haberman, reading their works at New Dominion Bookshop. Also, October 26th, Bent Theater Improv Comedy performs at the Bridge PAI. Yeah. October 27th, Big Blue Door performs long-form comedy, improv at Belmont's Art Collective. Yeah. Also, October 27th, Richard Rose, author of Brandy Lane, takes part in the Blue Ridge Wind Writers Book Fair at the City Space.
Writers.
City Space Gallery. Also on October 27th, the Charlottesville Writer House presents a retreat where Lisa Ellison and Deborah Prom explore various aspects of forgiveness.
What's that?
I don't know.
I ain't in no forgiving mood.
Burn him and leave him. I'm so horrible. And for your music options this week...
Right, for our music option this week, today we have the Ragged Mountain String Band at Batesville Market at 1 p.m. Seaville Jazz Congregation at Stinson Vineyards at 1 p.m. Oh, so you're going to have to split your time if you want to go to both of those. Two Wishes Trio at Glasshouse Winery at 3 p.m. On the 23rd, Bill Sanderson and Andy at Dirty Nelly's. 25th, we have Christ Episcopal Church's October Thursday noontime half-hour organ and carrion concert series. It continues with Deke Polifka. Oh, that's a lovely last name. Director of Music at St. Paul's Memorial Church, playing works of Mendelssohn. Yeah, I'm not saying that. Okay. He's playing some works. Let's all just right. Put it that way, all right? Also on the 25th, Victory Hall Opera presents The Forgotten, Hansel and Gretel, and The Medium at Lighthouse Studios, Vinegar Hill Theatre. The 25th, The Weed Eaters at The Whiskey Jar, Neil Goodlow at Dirty Nelly's. On the 26th, Black Voices Gospel Choir has its full concert at UVA Newcomb Hall Ballroom. You should really go by and see them. Oh, Ron, hey, what's up? There's an awful lot of singing coming from that end of the table. Enjoy jangly, folkly, romantic post-rock with The Working Effective at Glasshouse Winery, also on the 26th. Coda and Drunken All-Stars at Blue Mountain Brewery, the 26th and the 27th. The Mock Stars Bowl is back at Southern Cafe and Music Hall, this time benefiting the Shelter for Help and Emergency. Our man Remy St. Clair hosts the Rugged Arts Hip-Hop Showcase with... Wait, just wait for this lineup, all right? A.D. Carson.
What?
Marcel P. Black.
What?
Black Liquid. Janaea the Mailman. And Sons of Ikbe for a hip-hop show featuring S.G. the DJ at the Twisted Branch Tea Bazaar. And I'm so upset that I won't be here. I'll be in jolly old London. Rochelle Claiborne, our lovely friend Rochelle. I know her as Hyacinth. Performs with T. Ames, Bud Bryant, Rob Hubbard, Ivan Orr, and Tucker Rogers at Fellini on the 26th. It's her birthday bash, everyone. So bring a present, all right?
Wow.
On the 27th, Miles Pierce and Lauren Oppenheimer at Albemarle Ciderworks. Also on the 27th, Crozet Jam Band at Merriweather Springs Vineyard and Brewery. Shotsville musicians gather again for another tribute concert. Gorillaz do Gorillaz at X Park. All right, and here's the weekly list. Every Sunday, we have Travis Elliott at Rapture. Every Monday, we have the Bluegrass Jam at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Seafoot, weekly open jam at Thomas Seafoot. Jefferson Memorial Unitarian Church. Red and the Romantics at the Whiskey Jar. The ATM Unit at Rapture. Songwriter Night at the Local. Okay, that's all Monday. Tuesday, we have the traditional session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Latin Guitar Night with Miles Pierce and Umberto Sales at the Bebedero. The Ragged Mountain String Band at the Whiskey Jar. Oh, my, here we go. It's Wednesday. It's very long.
Wednesday.
Open mic night at Parade Not a Farm Brewery. Open mic night at Holly's Deli and Pub, hosted by Josh Mayo.
Boom.
Jazz Collective number 9 at Fellini's number 9. Beat DJ and Friends at the Bebedero. Bachata Fusion at the X Park. Ben Hernandez and Gabe Roby at the Whiskey Jar. 502 Fossils at the Shabin and the Mike Brzezinski and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. Okay, that's all Wednesday. Choose your place wisely, people. Every Thursday, we have Lua at the Bebedero. And every Thursday...
Oh, snap.
John Duff at Miller's. All right. Ooh, that was a long list.
That was a long list, but there's always a lot of stuff going down in Charlottesville.
We're
going to do a drop. We'll be right back. This is Homegrown. Drop!
This is Remy St. Clair.
And this is Fellow Man. We are the Sons of Ichi Bay.
And you are rocking with Homegrown, your show about local art.
On 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
38 minutes past the hour, if you're just tuning in, what is wrong with you?
Where have you been?
Don't let me sick Mimi on you.
You know, we got up early, we had our coffee, we made it here on time. And,
you're in trouble.
You know, I feel a little bit disrespected. You know, I feel unappreciated. You know, I'm here every Sunday, and, you know, I
stay tuned. After the show for the Sunday morning wake-up call. A previously recorded episode of the Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Rick Moore. Talking with...
Someone.
Yeah.
Someone.
Yes.
They'll be talking with someone. You know.
And it'll
happen. It's a surprise.
It's
previously
amazing.
Recorded, but this is a surprise.
And you should check it out. It'll wake you up if this hasn't already woke you up.
Oh, I believe we've woken them up.
We've woken them all up. David Dombrowski is in the house, humoring us.
No, he's laughing at us. There's a difference.
Yeah, right. In the Forest, She Grew Fangs is the new play that he is directing that is coming out at the Gorilla Theater October 25th through November 3rd. Preview tonight at Boylan's on the Corner. David Dombrowski, thank you so much for coming onto the show. How are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So we have the time and the place. It's the Forest. And She Grew Fangs. Is that all that happens?
That's what happens. There's a lot of forest and a lot of fangs.
Oh.
And claws.
Do we know why she grows fangs?
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay.
In the Forest, She Grew Fangs is about teenage bullying.
Oh.
And what happens when a young girl has been bullied mostly all her life and how she responds to it.
Oh. Well, I approve of her response.
Yeah, already.
I do, you know.
Well, bullying is a national epidemic. I mean, 28% of kids in grades 9 through 12 admit to have being bullied last year.
Our president is a bully.
Well, yes, that is true. Is that why you decided to do this? To highlight it?
I fell in love with the play 5 years ago when I first read it.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I was taken by the bullying theme, but I was also taken by the play's lyricism and how it handles language. It's very language rich, very poetic, and very different. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very nonlinear in a way. It's mostly told through monologues.
Oh.
And it's very dark. with a very surprise ending.
Mm. Oh, I like surprises.
This is a play by Stephen Spotswood. Talk about what attracted you to this play particularly and his writing and why you wanted, of course, you were talking about why you wanted to do it, but particularly like his story and his take on it. Because well, there's other plays like this. About bullying, but not as dark and not as gritty as this one sounds like.
His plays are very theatrical, very place-centered. He works with the Washington Rogues in D.C., the D.C. playwright.
Mm-hmm.
I found the play 5 years ago, five, 6 years ago, through the National New Play Network, and immediately knew that I had to do it. I come from the West Coast. I had my own theater production company there, and Stephen and I talked about doing the West Coast premiere with us, but unfortunately, circumstances got in the way, and I was finally able to do it. I had been already scheduled to do two other productions, so I kept it in my pocket, looking for a chance to do it someplace else.
Mm.
We moved here a year and a half ago, and the play found a home with the Gorilla Theater.
Mm-hmm. And how'd that happen? How did you hook up with Gorilla? Who contacted you?
I contacted them. I knew I was moving here about 6 months before we actually left the West Coast. And I started sending out feelers to the theaters around here, trying to get to know who does what and what they're interested in. And I sent the play to Gorilla, and they immediately jumped on it. And it just seems like a really good fit for the space and for the type of theater that they'd like to do.
Yeah, right on. So October 25th through November 3rd, it goes down. How long did y'all rehearse this? Process from pre to post, how long did it take?
We started rehearsing in early September. So ooh, about 6 weeks.
Okay.
And originally, this was going to be part of their teen series, cast completely with teens. It didn't work out that way. And that meant pretty much we were on a 4-rehearsal-a-week schedule, which is not a lot.
Yeah.
And we couldn't work around that because of other people's conflicts. So 6 weeks is a long time for a play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you have everybody together rehearsing every day, it can be.
Yes. And sometimes it's necessary. In this play, it worked out really well for us, especially with young people in it. There are some high schoolers in the play, which means that classes take priority. Their life takes priority. And we would rehearse till 9 o'clock as opposed to 10 o'clock or so.
Mm-hmm.
So bullying can be, well, it's an understatement to say bullying can be effective. Bullying can be traumatic. Bullying can stay with you a long time. It can be a really powerful thing. Did your actors have any difficulty grappling with this material, imbibing this material, or really inculcating this material?
Mm. Yes and no. The actors who actually do the bullying in the play are part of a 5-person ensemble who plays everything from trees to ponds to fairy tale creatures to bullies. And they're all nice, nice kids. They had a very hard time finding the anger in the bullying.
Mm.
And in the language of teen bullying, which can be very brutal.
Mm.
But they work through it. They're actors.
Mm-hmm. Mostly actors were the ones that got bullied.
Right.
Especially in my experience.
Right? It was always us theater geeks that,
drama geeks
that got it. Mm. Oh, well.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it can be especially, like, traumatic for the people that are, like, playing it. I remember the conversations that we would have in ragtime. A lot of white people were more concerned about the usage of the N-word than black folks were. Exactly. Exactly. Like, white people were more traumatized by having to say it than
yep.
black folks having to accept it.
Yep.
Because we've been through
accepting it for, oh, I don't know, how many hundreds of years
yeah,
now?
Yeah, we turned it into lemonade. Now it's in every one of our songs. So
right, exactly. Right.
We've made it what it is. So talk about the power of language and how, you know, adding on to Clinton's point, how did exactly they got through it? Like, did you kind of publicly talk about it? Like, yo, this can be really hard stuff to digest and take in. Did you give a disclaimer? Did you really prepare them in any way for the grittiness and the darkness of this
play? Well, when we were auditioning, we made sure that their parents, first of all, knew that there is language in the play that they would probably find unacceptable in any kind of a conversation, sometimes very unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And we got their permission. Mm-hmm. We asked them, are you okay with your child doing this, your teenage doing this? And the teenagers knew the play, and we gave them a heads up. If you're not comfortable in these situations, this is probably not the play for you.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked a lot about why words hurt, the power of words, and you know what happens when you're bullied. And it's interesting, and that's one of the things that Stephen looks at in the play, that are there really bad guys? Are there really good guys?
Mm.
The heroes become villains. The villains become heroes in a lot of ways.
Mm.
The victim becomes the accuser, the doer.
Mm.
So you're never really sure who's good, who's bad in the play.
Mm. And we're going to have to talk more about that after we do this drop. This is Homegrown, 94.7 WPVC. Drop!
This is Andy Davis from Bent Theater Improv Comedy, and you're listening to Homegrown, your show about local arts on 94.7
WPVC. God!
94.7 WPVC.
49 minutes past the hour, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Homegrown, 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
And when your father gets home, young man.
Wait, no. I'm David, that's Leslie, Clinton on the boards, David Domkowski. I apologize for saying your name wrong 800,000 times. You need to correct me next time.
I'm used to it.
You shouldn't be, though. You're a wonderful man. So, werewolves?
Werewolves.
Yeah.
So is that what happens when you get bullied, or is that what happens when you decide you're not taking it anymore?
Well, no. I guess that would kind of give away the whole, like...
Well, I don't know. I've never read the play. I don't know.
It won't give away the play. I mean, it's sort of a restructured look at Little Red Riding Hood, a reconstruction. But it doesn't quite end the way you expect Little Red Riding Hood to end.
No.
And in Little Red Riding Hood, of course, there is a big bad wolf.
Yes.
But what happens when you're bullied? What happens inside?
Mm.
When you're bullied over and over and over again? Spotswood uses the play to explore that, and his metaphor is werewolves.
Mm.
Or a werewolf.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
I like werewolves.
Yeah, werewolves are cool.
I grew up with all the 1940s horror films.
Oh, okay.
With Lon Chaney Jr.
Yes.
And who plays werewolves.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Hammer films of the 50s and 60s. And I've always had an affection for the darkness that those films had.
Mm-hmm.
And how much fun they were.
Yeah.
Which is probably why I'm very attracted to dark plays.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the true like meaning behind the metaphor of the werewolf, the darkness coming out, like this.
Right,
this
the darkness that's in everyone. Yeah.
Well, what do kids do who are bullied? They either survive it and go on to be regular citizens.
You think survive is kind of like a loose term? Maybe they internalize it and they kind of like persist through it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it always stays with you.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. I'll drop it.
Uh-oh.
What happens after you're bullied? Like my experience is it's one of two things. You either develop empathy and swear that you're not going to do what people have done to you, or you internalize the horror that's been put on you, and you become a bully yourself.
That's exactly correct. Mm. And we see that in the play.
Oh.
We see that in the play.
Mm-hmm.
The, but in today, I mean, kids get guns and kill other kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they were bullied. They take their own lives.
Yeah.
Because they were bullied. And there's not a lot that outsiders can do. It's, you know, it's something that kids and parents need to deal with in teaching their kids not to bully, to be kind.
Mm. Is that a message that you hope to accomplish with the showing of this production?
Yes, absolutely. The theater is a very powerful weapon, a tool, or it can be, to get a message out in a way that people can digest. We see that in Ragtime. Yeah, we see that in many other plays that
hopefully
are out there.
Hopefully they get the message.
Hopefully they get the message.
Mm-hmm. The sometimes multiple messages.
Yeah. Sometimes it falls on deaf ears.
Mm-hmm.
People don't want to be involved. But I think as an artist, or as artists, we have a responsibility to get that, to get those messages out.
Yes.
I mean, why do theater if it's only going to entertain you?
Right.
Although I think there's room for that.
Not enough snaps.
But it can't be just the reason you do theater.
Right.
As far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. 100%.
Yep.
I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. You have a rant?
I do not.
Okay.
You know, there was a birthday dance party Friday night.
That has also left the brain.
At Champion, so there, you know, there was...
You was looking good. I saw the pics.
Thank you. I had fun.
I'm sure you
know,
did.
Nobody else is going to throw me my dance party, so I threw it myself.
I'm sure you did. But, it sounds like it's going to be an amazing experience. So, October 25th through November 3rd.
He's so bossy today.
I mean, he kind of mic dropped it on that. Like,
I know,
what
right?
else am I supposed to do? So, do you like bread? Like, what other questions?
One more question.
Can
ask
I have?
Question.
Like, I think he kind of sealed the deal with that one.
Talk about the preview tonight. There's a preview tonight.
Yeah. Right? So we have a preview at Boylan Heights beginning at 7 p.m. A portion of all the proceeds comes to the theater, which is important. I mean, theater is expensive. And ticket sales can't pay for everything.
Right.
So they'll have people coming will have a chance to meet most of the cast and hear some of the monologues in the play without giving too much away.
Mm. Dope. And how long is that going to be for?
That's going to be from 7 till 9
okay.
tonight.
Cool. Cool. I got nothing.
I don't even think I've ever been in Boylan Heights.
I have. Was it difficult to restage the show for Boylan Heights? Or you're doing it on the main floor, right?
We're just doing it on the second floor.
Oh, on the second floor.
We're not doing the entire show.
Yeah.
Right. As I said, the play is most of the play is told through monologues. And the cast will be performing some of the monologues. Because they all have good stories. Each of the cast members have great stories to tell.
Right.
Which, of course, is one of the best things about theater. We tell great stories.
Were the play's monologues based on, I mean, what did Spots would do? Were they based on actual monologues from bullied people and from bullies?
The play came about because he was part of a workshop where they had to write a play. And he started writing poems based on a conversation and based on Instagram messages and texts about bullying.
Really?
And he wrote a series of poems and then decided that those poems would be a great start of a play. And a play structure would be a wonderful way of telling a story about bullying. And actually a lot... The one poem of his that I read is pretty much in the play as a separate monologue. It's a great way to start a play.
That's really different. Like to start with Twitter messages.
Is it, but does it, that's interesting because you said that his plays tend to be very theatrical. If you just describing that as a play that sounds like it's based around monologues, my first thing is it theatrical though? Is it just going to be a night of people talking, or is there? I mean, yeah.
No, not at all. As I said, there is a story about this young lady, and then a second young lady who comes into that community. Their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
The relationship between the young lady, Lucy, who's bullied, and her grandmother, who's taking care of her because her mother is never around for her, and she's an important part of why Lucy is bullied. She's essentially a porn actress online, and the teens around her know it, and they bully her about it. It's monologue heavy. It's not only just monologues, but it's a way of getting inside each character and knowing what they're thinking, why they're thinking, what they're thinking, and how they feel.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Wow. I got werewolves and grandmothers werewolves. And porn actresses. Like, this sounds like a mofo.
Your kind of show, huh, David?
I mean, I'm there. I'm already there.
I skipped the part about the inappropriate pictures on Facebook that another girl is dealing with.
No. Oh. I mean, you had me at werewolves. I mean, there's really nothing else I can say.
Where else are you going to hear that tagline?
It's 10:59. We got to wrap it up. I mean, I would love to talk for an hour on werewolves alone. But yeah, stay tuned for Sunday morning wake-up call. It's going to be great. I'm about to do this last matinee for Ragtime and maybe catch an hour of sleep. Maybe
an hour?
Not. No. You're going to power nap it? No, I'll probably read all the plays that you gave me.
Good. That's what you should be doing.
Love you, Leslie.
I love you,
Clinton.
Too.
See y'all next week. How about that? Deal?
Deal.
All right. Peace.
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.